Welcome to the ClearAdmit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 25th, 2024. Are you looking for an MBA program where you'll be more than just a number? Vanderbilt Business offers a personalized learning experience to help each student reach their unique career goals. Whether you're looking to switch careers entirely or accelerate the path you're on, the Vanderbilt MBA program will provide you with the individual support you need to propel your career forward. Vanderbilt is currently waiving their $200 application fee for MBA Wiretaps listeners. To learn more about the Vanderbilt MBA program and to claim your application fee waiver, visit business.vanderbilt.edu/clearadmit. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham. It's spring.
Yeah, you mentioned there was like some sun in England, so that's good.
but it is literally spring, right? The equinox or whatever it is.
You're right. That's right. Yes. Yeah, we're recording this, I think, on the first day of spring. You are right. Yeah. So there you have it. So speaking of spring, I need everyone who's tuning in, I really need your help. And this isn't going to be one of those usual pleas for you guys to write reviews or anything. But if you're tuning into this, we really need you to take our spring survey. We do two surveys a year of the applicant pool, and they're really helpful to us in terms of our understanding of what you all need from ClearAdmit over the course of an admissions cycle, but also for the schools that we work with. So if you're willing, we have a survey that's out there in the field. You can go and take it. It'll take you less than 10 minutes to fill out, and you can get to it by going to bit.ly/CA Spring Survey. All one word, all lowercase. And, you know, again, it's actually a fun survey. I took it when we were testing it, and it asks you about, like, you know, how, did you add or drop schools from your list? It's all about like how you arrive at your list of schools to apply to and what makes you add or subtract schools. And there's some questions about ROI and other things that you might be thinking about when you're applying. So this survey is for anyone who's either already applied to business school, even people who've been admitted, but also for people who are thinking about applying in the future. So please take it. These surveys are actually how, you know, we kind of keep ClearAdmit running, right? So it's really helpful when people take these surveys. So please do so. They're anonymous. And I'll stop. I'm off the soapbox. I just had to put that in there, Alex.
No Amazon gift cards?
No, this is just, well, we're just looking for people to be, to give back to the community.
Yeah, there you go.
So
yeah, don't worry, guys. A couple of weeks, it'll be Amazon gift cards.
So. Maybe. I don't know. So tell us what's going on though, Alex, because, you know, let's see, last week was the second of what we call decision weeks. And I think this week there's still some schools that are going to give out decisions, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're right in the thick of decision weeks for round two, as we've talked in the last couple of weeks on the podcast. But last week, it was Georgetown, ISA, Goizueta, Booth, Haas, McCombs, Anderson, and INSEAD amongst the top schools releasing their round two decisions. And this upcoming week, we've got the big three, Wharton, Harvard, and Stanford, along with Yale, London Business School, Kellogg, and Foster amongst the top programs releasing decisions. So Livewire is really quite active right now. And best luck, everyone that's sort of waiting for these decisions. And fingers crossed, they're great decisions.
Did you just say the big three and then said Wharton, Harvard, and Stanford in that order? Is that what you just did?
Well, I had it written down in that order. So okay. Yeah.
Is that the order that they're releasing decisions, maybe? I think it might be.
Well, you know, WHS, not HSW. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so a
Graham,
couple of
you chose Wharton over Harvard, did you not?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did. So a couple of quick things before we get into the candidates for this week. So we're doing an event on April 3rd at noon Eastern, and it's an event about like pursuing an MBA without a business background. So if you didn't study business as an undergraduate, coming from kind of a non-traditional place, you can join us and learn more about that. We've actually teamed up with Carnegie Mellon Tepper. So I think there's actually, what we've done is we've gotten a couple of students at Tepper who are you know, non-traditionals themselves who, you know, didn't study business at the undergraduate level. So we're going to do this webinar, and I think it'll be really insightful. And you can sign up for that at bit.ly/non-trad MBA. So NONTRAD MBA. So join us for that on April 3rd at noon. Otherwise, Alex, on the website, we ran an article about finance placements. So we have Elliot on our team who takes all the career reports from the top 20 or so MBA programs in the United States. And he, you know, kind of aggregates them together and looks for trends and things. And so we ran this article about who is doing well when it comes to placing candidates on the buy side of finance. And that means venture capital, private equity, and investment management. And so it just kind of, you know, it's a great article. It really breaks down all the numbers, and you can see even, you know, individually, like who wins in VC, who wins in private equity, et cetera. And also just the overall finance placements too. So we have like investment banking, we do have some sell side stuff in there too. So good article, definitely recommend checking it out. Alex, I think you've already looked at it, right?
Who wins?
The M7 kind of dominates this, and in particular, Stanford, Harvard, and Wharton tend to do very well when placing candidates on the buy side. On the sell side, there's some other schools that emerge, like Johnson, NYU, and then there's some schools that are pretty good in all areas, like, you know, Chicago Booth. And so, yeah, you should look at the article, but there's, you know, it's pretty interesting to see how these placements shake out.
What about Columbia? You mentioned all the top finance schools.
Yeah, Columbia, yeah. And also Columbia completely dominates the investment management domain.
Okay.
So, and that's because they have that special program within the MBA about kind of investing, right? So, yeah, so there's definitely... Yeah, so the M7 schools do very well here, and then some other non-M7 schools also, you know, Stern, Johnson. I mean, there are other schools that do well, particularly when it comes to like investment banking jobs, right? So,
yeah.
In any event, very cool article. We're going to do more of those. I think I saw one come across my desk that is about MBB placement, so McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, and strategy consulting overall. That will probably have, you know, gone live on the site by the time you're listening to this episode. So yeah, lots more to come on the career aggregation data stuff. So it's fun.
Very good.
We got a handful of Real Humans alumni. We keep profiling all these graduates of MBA programs to kind of ask them questions about how they got their jobs and what they would do differently if they could go to business school again, and lots of fun stuff. So we had, I'll just give them to you here. We have Darren, who went to HBS. He graduated back in 2019, and he works at PepsiCo as a strategy director. And, you know, it's just interesting to kind of hear what everyone says. We asked them all these different questions, and we asked him, what about your HBS MBA experience prepared you for your current career at Pepsi? And he said, the world-class academics and case method approach at HBS have become a true differentiator for me. Discussing real-world industry problems every day and thinking like a CEO to make applied business decisions for 2 years changes how you approach business strategy and management. HBS was a perfect fit, allowing me to learn not only from the brilliant faculty, but also from the globally diverse perspectives in the classroom, as well as through extracurriculars and travel immersions. So there you go. Darren is putting his HBS MBA to use over at PepsiCo, and it sounds like he's in a pretty senior role already, and he's only, what, I guess he's like 4 or 5 years out. So pretty impressive.
Very good. Yeah.
We also heard from Ruben, who went to Stanford, graduated in 22, and works for Uber. Alex, you made a joke about this.
I just want to know what they're doing at Uber.
Yeah, you asked, does he drive for Uber? And I said, I don't think so. It turns out he's a product manager. What's cool about Ruben is that he ran a fast casual restaurant chain in New York City called Jianbing. I guess it's these Chinese crepes. And he ran this. This was his pre-MBA job. So he's like running all these restaurants in New York and decides to pick up and go off to business school. And I think, you know, he found that it was, he needed it. You know, he said pivoting from 4 years running a restaurant that I co-founded to being a PM at Uber is a pretty big leap in terms of the substance and style of work. GSB was immensely valuable in preparing me for this transition. And he talks about some of the classes he took, Paths to Power, which is a famous class taught by Professor Jeffrey Pfeffer. And then also this, what is it called? Interpersonal Dynamics, which some people on campus there call the touchy-feely class. So he's had a great time at Stanford and is now doing well at Uber. Two more.
Did you know that Kirsten Moss now teaches a class in the Stanford MBA program?
I had seen that, yeah. So she's the former dean of admissions and now spending some time teaching there, which makes sense to me. She's a PhD and a brilliant person. Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of great conversations.
Maybe she's teaching that touchy-feely class.
I don't know. I have to ask her.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a really interesting pivot.
Yeah, definitely.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And then we also talked to Anton, who went to Berkeley Haas, graduated in 22, and works at Nike as a senior brand marketing associate. And the only thing we asked him, we said, what was one thing that you would change or do differently as part of the job search? And Anton said, avoid stressing about finding the perfect opportunity. There's so many great post-MBA launchpad opportunities and so many different paths that can lead to a successful, fulfilling career. So that was nice to hear. Just take some of the stress off. Last but not least, we talked to Andrew from Yale School of Management. He graduated back in 2018, and he did a Yale MBA in joint with a master's in environmental management, which is a degree that Yale offers. And he's now a senior director at EY Parthenon. And, you know, he just said that we asked him, like, why Yale? And he said Yale's positioned itself since its onset as a place to have forward-looking conversations on the interaction of business and society. I found through the interview process that this was more than just a motto. SOM attracts the students and faculty who are motivated to have these hard conversations and to integrate with students from across disciplines to push their thinking. So anyway, that's Andrew at Yale. You got to read these on the site. I prepare for the show and I look at them and I end up reading them all, which I'm not supposed to. I'm just supposed to pick out some highlights, but I get kind of sucked in. They're really interesting.
And they really do show the quality of folks that get MBA. So I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I'm always like, wow, these are really amazing people. So in any event, if you want to reach out to Alex or me, you can send us an email at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps and we will write you back. You can also leave us ratings and reviews on the various platforms where you're listening. So please do that as well. Otherwise, Alex, I don't have anything else for this week, and we can get into the candidates if you're ready.
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So our first candidate this week is looking to start school in the fall of 25. They have Cambridge, Harvard, LBS, MIT, Oxford, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale on the current target list. They've been working in corporate development pre-MBA, and they want to pivot into venture capital or private equity after business school. They have a GMAT score of 730, they have a GPA of 3.54, and they've been working for 5 years. They're located in Houston, Texas, and they mentioned that, I mean, essentially their work career has been in and around, and really just in the energy sector. They mentioned they did 2 years as a financial analyst for a super major oil company. Then they did 2 years of corporate development and finance at a private equity-backed midstream company, and then 1 year of corporate development at a private equity-backed carbon capture company. And that's where they are now, I believe. And they also say they had some pretty visible leadership roles in college and that they sit on the board of a renewable energy nonprofit. They've raised a lot of money and led volunteer events through a previous employer's corporate philanthropy program. So that's kind of the background. And, you know, they have a pretty star-studded list of target schools. You had a little bit of back and forth with this candidate. So do you want to tell us what you're thinking on them, Alex?
Yeah, I really like this candidate. I didn't ask specifically, I guess. I was just checking the entry about their activities outside of work, their sort of non-work life, their hobbies, their interests. Mm-hmm. So you know, we perhaps need to know a little bit more about that. Their goal is to sort of, well, not their goal, their goal for the MBA is to go to an M7 program, mm-hmm. or at least to get out of Texas. You know, I've lived in Texas for a while, but I'm not sure getting an MBA is the only route out of Texas, but there you go.
Yeah, they mentioned that.
But that's sort of defining, because one of the questions I asked, because of their spread of geography of MBA programs is, you know, is there any geographic focus, you know, Europe versus US and so forth. And it seems if they can get into an M7 program, they'd go to a US-based program. If they can't, then LBS and some European programs become more appealing to them.
Right.
So that's sort of how they're thinking of that. I think they've, again, assuming they're a decent human being and they have some outside of work sort of interests and stuff, I got to imagine that they are M7 quality, Graham. Their numbers are decent. You might argue that they're not absolutely outstanding,
yeah.
but but they're certainly decent.
Yeah, so 7.7335. So yeah, it's very solid.
Yeah, yeah. So that puts them in the mix. I think their work experience is nicely progressive, and it's nice to go from sort of oil and gas to sort of, like you say, carbon capture or whatever you want to call it. So recognizing the importance of sustainability and so forth. So I like that progression. I think quite honestly, there's a lot to like here. Are they Harvard Stanford Wharton material? Quite possibly, right? And as we looked in that career report that you talked about earlier in the show, Graham, that's one of those three gives them a big leg up to execute on their goals, right? If they want private equity type sort of roles, obviously Harvard Stanford Wharton is going to give them the best chance, probably in that order, maybe Stanford, Harvard, Wharton, and so forth. What could they do to increase their chances? So if they're targeting next season, if they think there's any wriggle room in that GMAT to improve it a little bit, we could argue that a higher than median GMAT score is better than one that's at the median. But other than that, if they're doing something super interesting outside of work, I would ratchet that up too and, show some progression impact there. Looks like they're doing very well at work. Yeah. So quite honestly, I think they're a pretty good candidate, Graham. They just want to leave Texas. Yeah.
I would say the missing thing for me was just wondering a little bit more, like you said, about the personal background. Because I think work experience-wise, yeah, very interesting progression, logical, fits with their goals. Yeah. It sounds like they've done some amazing things. So getting the rest of it, like, are they a marathon runner? What are they doing with their spare time that makes them interesting outside of their passion for the energy sector and renewables, which is in of itself pretty cool. I also think that, yeah, like you said, 7.33.5, I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but for Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton, it's kind of average, right? So I feel like if there is wiggle room, like you say, retaking the test could help. And then the last thing is we don't know. I have no idea if this person is, kind of an American or are they an international student that came to the U.S. or something. So I don't know enough about just the profile to understand whether they're going to be sort of overrepresented or underrepresented in the candidate pool. But still, I think, they have most of the ingredients here. They have time to sort of put everything in place. And I think, yeah, they have a very good chance of getting into a top program on their list for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
All right. So I want to thank them for their post. And let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So our second candidate this week is also looking at, the next season. So applying to start in the fall of 25. They've got five schools on the target list, and those schools are Harvard Business School, MIT, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. This person has been working currently in analytics at a major tech company. And after business school, they're kind of torn. They think maybe consulting, and so they've got Bain, BCG, and McKinsey on the list, but they're also interested in maybe just going back into tech. And so they have Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and LinkedIn on the list there. GMAT score again, 7.30. So I'm sensing a pattern here. And then GPA 3.96, so a very, very good undergraduate GPA. 6 years of work experience to date. This person is located in the U.S., and they mentioned that their first job was in economic consulting at a top firm. Then they had a second job where they did product analytics at an insurance tech startup. And now their current job is analytics at a major tech company. They also indicate that as an extracurricular, they're involved with their undergraduate institution as an alumni interviewer. They also lead or co-lead, I guess, their alumni chapter for that school. And this is kind of an interesting wrinkle, Alex, that we haven't talked about. They are the chair for an MBA Partners Club. I guess that means that maybe their spouse or significant other is currently attending an MBA program. And they say, I guess the top 16 program, if I'm reading this correctly. So they're active in kind of an MBA program's life, which is interesting to me. But what do you make of this candidacy? And yeah, what are the chances for this person? Anything they should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic profile. If the first profile was very good, I think this just is a little bit better. And why do I say that? That 3.96 GPA.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
I mean, I got to know what they didn't get an A double plus in or whatever it is that gets you from a 4.0 to a 3.96. Yeah. It must have been a horribly difficult class.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, there's just so much to like about this profile. I got to assume that they're again, much like our prior candidate, their professional experience is very strong. They've had two or three different roles. They came back to us to talk about some of their leadership experience through those roles. And in terms of outside of work activities, we've got more insight there, and they work in women's nonprofits and so on and so forth. So whilst they thought that that wouldn't help differentiate them, I still think it says a good says something very positive about the candidacy. Slightly longer length of experience, and they have a bit of an MBA experience, right? As you say, as a partner. So I think, quite frankly, Graham, this is, and obviously they also listen to the podcast on a
Oh,
regular
yes.
basis, so that just makes them smarter and everything else to do with that. So but no, I mean, frankly, I've got to think that this is a very, very strong profile. I would absolutely think that this person should be targeting the very best, and that's what they're doing with the programs that they've listed.
Yeah, and I should just add, I mean, this they indicated in the comments that they went to a women's college and they've spent a significant time volunteering in different nonprofits that focus on helping women overcome difficulties or promoting education for women.
Yeah.
So yeah, this person, yeah, to me, kind of a home run. I mean, you've got a lot of the ingredients that you'd like to see. And they did say, this is the second person that's done this. They said, "Thank you, Alex and Grant." So I'm now there's this second person that's calling me Grant. I guess it's because maybe it's hard to hear that I'm saying Graham when I introduce the show each week. But in any event, they said that they're a longtime listener, which is great. But I guess one of the questions they had that I just wanted to tease out here is they were asking us about the fact that they said that when they were younger, they moved around, they went to all these different places because, I guess it was something to do with like a childhood activity, maybe a singing group. I can't remember what it was, but so they like visited all these different places and they're kind of wondering how heavily can they lean on that older stuff or do they stick to the more recent activities like all the work they're doing for women? And you weighed in on that, right? You were kind of saying on the website that you thought, probably stick more to the current stuff. But I mean, I
Yeah.
guess there's a place in the app to work it in. I mean, I think it's a resume item or maybe it's, a fun fact or something, because it is interesting.
Yeah, it might be a fun fact. I think the problem is, if you won a contest when you were 10 years old, I don't think there's a real place in the app for that,
Right.
application for that. But I think the one other area that it could come up is the Stanford "What means most to you and why." If there was something from that travel experience with the choir that started a journey which they're still on, sort of evolving and learning and whatever, and anchor it all toward a long-term sort of vision for themselves that the Stanford MBA sort of fits, then yeah, you could argue that it could go into that type of essay.
Like a journey of earning frequent flyer miles, or are you thinking something more serious? Yeah, no, but yeah, I think you're right though. That is an interesting place where it could come in, that essay.
And I guess my more dismissive remark was more, there's so much other good stuff here that if you're dipping into stuff before undergrad, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, if you can make the connection to now and it's part of that narrative, there's some possibilities. The other thing that I forgot to mention was there was a little bit of waffle on the short-term goal. And I just think with a candidate like this, just pick one of the two short-term goals as part of the essay approach, the one that makes potentially most sense in their particular case. I mean, both are very viable, but just pick one connecting to a longer-term goal. Obviously, when they're in the MBA program, they could be looking at both, and so forth. But I always think for application strategy, it's best to have one cogent goal story, short then long term. A few schools might ask for a backup. And if that's the case, then they've got a ready backup in the short run. But I would focus on one short-term goal.
Yeah, well said. I think the only other thing I was going to say about this, so I agree with you, pick a goal, whether it's consulting or product management in tech, it doesn't matter, but just pick one. And then the only thing I was thinking about is they want to work on the West Coast, they said in the comments, and yet they only have one West Coast school on their list. And it's arguably a school that, you know, not so easy to get into in Stanford, right? So I was just kind of thinking, wow, you know, should they be looking at a Berkeley or, you know, should they be, you know, kind of casting a slightly wider net? I think they are kind of, I mean, it's a great candidacy. No getting around that. But I just was thinking, wow, if they really want to land on the West Coast, you know, having Haas on the list or even a UCLA, it might be smart because those are schools that are sending lots and lots of people to that part of the US. So anyway, just something to keep in mind, some food for thought. But great candidacy.
Yeah, I think she could do that in round two, Graham.
That's true. So could sort of go for the first batch and then see what happens. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I go really high in round one, see what happens. Yeah.
Okay. Well, appreciate her sharing her profile and the kind words about the show. Let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So our third candidate this week comes from a DecisionWire entry that was shared, and I'll give you the facts and figures, and then we'll kind of debate the decision that they need to make. This candidate applied to Dartmouth, Duke, Kellogg, Wharton, and Darden. So far in the admission cycle, they've been admitted to Dartmouth with $11,000 as a scholarship. They were also admitted to Fuqua over at Duke and there they got $160,000 scholarship. And they also got into UVA Darden with an $82,000 scholarship. They did note that they have not yet heard from Kellogg, and it sounds like they didn't make the cut over at Wharton. So those are the results. And in case you're keeping score at home, they had a GMAT score of 730, which makes them the third person we're featuring this week with that same exact score. And their GPA was 3.7. They're located in Washington, D.C. So that's kind of the background. They do want to get into tech or pharma, ideally kind of healthcare tech is really where they want to land. And they tell us that their goal is to get into a health tech startup in product or strategy in either Washington, D.C. or Boston. And it seems like for one reason or another, they said any advice on Tuck versus Fuqua based on my goals. So even though they have that Darden offer with 82,000, they seem very focused on either Fuqua with 160K or Dartmouth with 11,000. And Alex, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this last tidbit, which is they note, I've been listening to this podcast every week for almost a year. Thank you for the great advice on my profile last summer. I'm thrilled with my results so far. So in any event, so another listener. So you were asking last week if anyone listens to the show. Apparently there are at least a couple people tuning in. But yeah, what do you do here? Because I mean, Dartmouth's not giving them much money and Fuqua's giving them a ton of money. So what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think it's quite difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, it all points towards Fuqua in terms of the money on the table. Fuqua is very good for healthcare, so they've checked that box too. That's a huge sort of cost differential. But then, as you pointed out before we came on air, as we were prepping for the show, I suppose, they want to be in Boston post-MBA doing healthcare tech. So what's the alumni network in Boston for Fuqua versus Tuck, where Tuck sends, I think Elliot put the statistic in there, about 20% of its class into Boston, if I remember that correctly. So that gives a little bit of pause, but I just think that's such a big difference in scholarship, Graham.
Yeah, it is a big difference. I mean, I think, you know, you could make arguments about, you know, Tuck being a better school or Fuqua or not. I mean, there's a lot of people who could argue that one, you know, different ways and for different reasons, right? But the money is really substantial here. I mean, $160,000 versus basically we could almost call Tuck kind of no scholarship. It's $11,000. It's not, I mean, it's peanuts comparatively.
Right.
So, right. But I do agree that if you want to land in Boston, you know, but they mentioned Boston or DC, and that's what complicates this. Because when you start talking about DC, you say, well, okay, that's, you know, mid-Atlantic, you're much closer to kind of, you know, North Carolina and, you know, Richmond and DC. I mean, those are, you know, you're closer. And I feel like Duke's reach, I mean, I know Duke has a lot of people in New York, for example.
Yeah.
So it does, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, unless they had some like amazing fit with Tuck, which, you know, a lot of candidates do, right? But I think, if, you know, and now you were going to say they should go back and talk to Tuck about this if they really want to land there.
If they, on the current basis of the 160K at Duke, if they're committed in their mind that they're going to go to Duke, but they sort of in their heart, they're like, you know, Tuck would be the right place if I could rationalize it from a financial standpoint. I would see if I could negotiate a better scholarship at Tuck, because at the end of the day, they could do that in the sense that, all right, I'm good. I got 160K at Fuqua. That's where I'm going. So a last-ditch effort to see if Tuck would close that gap might well pay dividends. I don't think I'd do the negotiation if I wasn't then committed to switching to Tuck if they came back at a certain amount. But as you say, Tuck for many people is in a slightly higher tier. Yeah, it's tricky, but yeah, I don't think there's any harm in seeing if Tuck would be a little bit more generous.
Yeah, agreed. The thing that's a little surprising to me is just the disparity in these scholarships, because you usually don't see such a disparity. I mean, you know, we do see, you know, oh, you know, you might get less from a very top tier than the next tier down and the next tier down, so on and so forth. But this is a pretty huge disparity. So, maybe worth exploring. But otherwise, I think, probably going to Fuqua makes sense here. It's a lot of money. They can certainly accomplish their goals from Fuqua easily. So, and you know, Fuqua actually is really good for healthcare stuff too, right? So, in any event, they're not going to go wrong. These are nice problems to have. I do want to thank them for listening to the show every week for almost a year. There should be kind of a special prize for tolerating us week in and week out. But I'm glad that everything's worked out for them so far. And so congrats to them on these amazing results. And Alex, those are our three candidates.
I'll just ask you a quick question just to delay the show for 30 seconds, just to keep Dennis on his toes.
Yeah, that's our producer, Dennis. Yeah.
if they get in, because we don't know, I think if they get into Kellogg with no money, what do they do?
That's a tough call. I mean, Kellogg's a great program, also very good in healthcare.
Yeah.
I'd look at the placement stats again in terms of, you know, that kind of Boston, D.C. stuff and the alumni groups and those markets and see what kind of activity there is that might help point the way. But I mean, yeah, it's going to be hard. I think in all cases, it's going to be hard to walk away from what's essentially a free ride at Duke. That's big. So in any event, Alex, maybe next week you can pick candidates that don't all have the same exact GMAT score. But in any event, no, thanks for picking these out. Some very interesting lessons and debates, as always. And let's do it all again in a week's time. We'll see everyone then.
Very good. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe.